From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from the canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, and this is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and most intriguing guests. We are the favorite program of hootenoggers, wendigos, skunk apes, and donkey devils. So keep it tuned right here. Let's start this hour off right with none other than the man who needs no introduction, Joshua P. Warren. How you doing, Josh?
I am just doing fantastically here in the Bermuda Triangle. It's wonderful to be talking with you and Sam, and we know that Shelley's out there in the field encountering, I understand vibrational things happening in the middle of the night. I don't know what she told you about. Beds have been shaking and rocking. Did you hear any of that stuff?
She said that it was some pretty shady dealings going on in the deep south for her the last week or two. And we spent a good amount of time the first hour speaking with Shelley, and I look forward to hearing even more and seeing photos when she gets back. Sounds like she's having quite a time in the field.
Oh, yeah. So we're bringing this, you know, multi-dimensional, multifaceted presentation to the program tonight. And I'm glad that things are perhaps starting to warm up a little bit there in the mountains as well.
Oh, yeah. Not so bad.
So, Vance, I have a few things that I would like to sort of catch the listeners up on. For one thing, have you ever come into contact with Timothy Green Beckley, Mr. UFO?
I have. He's a friend on Facebook, and I keep a close eye on what he's into. Of course, he and I share a passion for some of that nostalgia sort of flying saucer, early UFO encounter type stuff. And he, like you say, Mr. UFO, he's the go-to guy for that.
He is one of a kind. He's a legend, and you know, he represents that true classic era of, you know, 1960s ufology, which is quickly sort of dissolving, unfortunately. But his legacy is profound, and he and I have been good friends for a long time. I've had him on Speaking of Strange a number of times. And, of course, one of the reasons that I always was interested in his work was, I remember, decades ago, I started reading these books called Commander X books.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the idea behind the Commander X books is that this guy, Commander X, is supposedly this whistleblower who's ex-CIA, ex-NSA, top secret military guy who worked at Area 51, who has had access to the UFO technology. He has seen the reptilians. He has seen all these creatures in person, and he knows about the, you know, sinister New World Order, Illuminati, conspiratorial agenda that is in place for all of us. And his books are very well written, and he's published many of them over the years. But every time I would see Tim, I would say, okay, who is Commander X? Okay, I mean, you could tell me. And he would never budge. Every time I'd have him on Speaking of Strange, I'd say, come on, Tim, who is Commander X? And I'm going to say, I'm giving you an opportunity to finally get it out there. And he would never, ever say anything about it. Well, just recently, Tim surprised me. I checked my P.O. box, and I had a package from him. And it contained a book, which I'm holding in my hands, called The Commander X Files Updated, Identifying the Real Commander X Alien Hunter. And so I sat down with a nice cup of coffee and dug into this thing, and it is just an absolutely fascinating book. Tim would kill me if I gave away who Commander X is, according to this book. But I want you and all the listeners to know that I did sit down with this book and I read this absolutely chilling chapter from the book about the real alien agenda, who these creatures are, exactly what they look like, and the horrific things they have in store for humans. And of course, if anybody's listening to the program who does not realize this already, from time to time, in order to supplement the show, I will do a special little podcast that usually it's 30 minutes or it might be closer to an hour without commercials, where I just feature something that I know our listeners will like. And if you go to speakingofstrange.com, click the link there to the podcast, the regular link where you can listen to all of our normal show podcasts, you'll find this new podcast that I did where I talk more about Commander X. I read this chapter that's absolutely astonishing and sort of rings true on many different levels about the alien agenda. And there's a lot of other good stuff in there as well. So that's the first thing that I wanted to tell you about. And have you ever spoken to Tim in person, Vance?
No, I haven't. I have not.
Well, we need to make arrangements then to get him on the show so you could interview him about this.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I should reach out to him because he's definitely involved in so many fascinating things. Now, is Timothy Green Beckley the person who claims authorship of the Commander X Files, the book that you're speaking of?
No. For the longest time, I thought, like, surely he was Commander X, you know, and that was why he had a little twinkle in his eye when I would ask him who Commander X was. But he would swear, he would say, no, I'm not Commander X. I'm not Commander X. And what I will tell you this much about what he reveals in this book. And by the way, I'm not making a penny off of this book, so I'm not trying to, you know, sell this because it's going to profit me. I'm simply endorsing it because it really is a great, interesting read. He said that, okay, there is a real man, a real individual who is Commander X, but all these years, understandably, this guy has been sort of living out of a suitcase. And therefore, sometimes when he would send in a quote-unquote manuscript, it would be a lot of pages that might include napkins or, you know, part of a cardboard box or whatever he had around when he had an opportunity to scribble some information and then get it out there quickly to Tim's publishing company. Because, you know, Tim owns Interlight, Global Communications, Conspiracy Journal. Those are different imprints of his publishing company. So he would sort of send information to Tim's company piecemeal at times. And then Tim would often sit down with some of his editors and then they would go through it and they would turn it into a more sort of cohesive, easy to read manuscript. So
right. There
definitely is some input on the editorial end, but that's not uncommon in writing in general and publishing. So that's one thing that, again, you know, I'll whet everybody's appetite for that. The second thing I want to tell you about is a couple of, inventions, I guess you could say. The first thing is, you know, I have told you over the years that I have had an ability to see the aura to some extent with my naked eyes.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever seen anything like the aura, Vance?
No. I think Forrest Connor became quite good at that, but I have no skill in that. That's not in my skill set.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I was hired by A&E to do a psychic cruise, as they call it, years ago, and Forrest was part of my staff, and this was one of the times when I went through and read a lot of this training material that was out there to help people see the aura. And I have always been fascinated by it because, you know, when you get to the point where you can start seeing the aura, you actually can see people's moods change in a very vivid way. And, you know, and you have personality traits that might produce a certain color, and then you have temporary moods that will change that color. You can see the aura around your pets and other animals. You can even see the aura around plants because they are living things. I mean, it really is incredible, and it also gives you higher odds of seeing paranormal activity in general with your naked eyes.
Okay.
So after studying this, all these training materials out there for years, I got kind of mixed results. Some work better than others. And then I started over a year ago really looking into the nuts and bolts of how the eye works and how the brain perceives color and all this kind of stuff. And I finally created a set of glasses, if you will, that I call them the Aura Eyes training glasses, the first type of glasses of their kind that have ever been produced. And I've copyrighted everything regarding the design and the information for how to use these. And I guarantee you, if you're one of these people who's interested in seeing the aura, if you put these things on within minutes, you will start seeing the first layer of the aura. And then later on, you'll start to see the colors appear. I guarantee that. And you know what the big secret is, Vance?
No idea.
The secret is, with all of these other things that have been put out there, like there are other types of glasses and goggles they say will help you see the aura, you put these things on, and they're static. They just remain right there locked in place on your face, and you're supposed to just stare at it long enough, and then magically something's supposed to happen. Well, these glasses are not like that. They are designed to work dynamically. So when you put them on, there are different lines that are positioned in different relationships to parts of your eye. And by moving your head in certain ways, you exercise certain parts of the eyes. You are able to actually influence the way the rods and the cones are behaving. And what you will see is it's this exercising, it's this dynamic part of the process that starts changing the way the eye sees light, and the next thing you know, boom, you're seeing the aura. So I've got all that stuff at joshuapwarren.com, and of course I talk a little bit about that in the podcast as well. I know we're coming up shortly here on a break, and when we come back from that break, I'd like to tell you about some other wacky experiments that I've been doing here. I have an appearance coming up on Coast to Coast AM, March 31st, where I'm going to be breaking a lot of news, but I'm going to tease it and tell you guys first a little bit about it when we come back.
All right. Sounds excellent. We've got Joshua P. Warren, the man himself, on the line from Puerto Rico, and we'll get some more info from Josh coming up after the break. You are listening to Speaking of Strange. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. It is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange officially. I'm your host, Vance Pollack, and we have Joshua P. Warren on the line. In the last segment, you heard Josh tease us a little bit about a new Commander X book and his aura glasses. And, Josh, you say the podcast with some fresh content on that is available at speakingofstrange.com under the regular podcast link there, your special reports. You've been doing those for some months now.
Yeah, that's right. I started, I guess, in the fall. I did the first one. And they come out, you know, erratically because my schedule is erratic and irregular. And obviously with my traveling around, I mean, I have recorded some in Asheville and some in Puerto Rico and some in other places. So it's kind of like, you know, when I can snatch a moment and I have a quiet enough environment, I'll sit down and give everybody a sort of a specialized update.
And you're real good about getting the email notifications out when new content is available. So people can sign up at joshuapwarren.com for the email newsletter, get notifications.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and that is the best way to stay updated on everything that we do. And, you know, if you do sign up for the free e-newsletter, be sure to add us to your contacts to make sure that it doesn't end up in your spam folder or something like that. But we have thousands and thousands of people all over the world who subscribe to the e-newsletter, and it's amazing how many people all over the world listen to this show and keep up with what we do. And every time I have a product that comes out, it just shows me. I mean, like, for example, when I made this batch of Aura glasses the other day, we already have sent them to Oman, Singapore, Australia. I mean, just some obscure little countries I never even heard of before. We really do have a lot of people who stay informed through that free e-newsletter. So, yeah, you can get all that stuff as well through – I think there's a place at speakingofstrange.com or joshuapwarren.com. But, you know, Vance, one of the cool things about being able to work in this arena is the ability to do experiments that one would ordinarily never – have an opportunity to do. It's one thing to sit around in a bar and have a few beers and talk about the idea of some wacky, mad scientific experiment. But because that I have chosen this particular field, so to speak, I actually say, well, hey, if I go out and do this experiment, then I might get rewarded for it in some way, you know, because that's pretty much what I do to make my living. Finding interesting content that I can use to make new products or to write books about or to talk about on TV shows, etc. So anyway, I have this I'm going to go out there and I'm going to call this a brand new field. And I know that's a bold statement, a brand new field that I'm taking credit here for creating. And I still have to do some more experiments over the next 2 weeks before I spill all the beans. And that's what I'm going to do March 31st on Coast to Coast AM. But this field is called paracymatics. And I'm going to go ahead and give you the gist of it.
Okay.
Are you familiar with sigils, Vance?
Magic signs, right?
Exactly. That's right. Magical symbols and signs. In fact, I became really interested in sigils when I was investigating Robert the Doll for the first time in Key West. And I ended up becoming the first person to get an opportunity to look at Robert under a UV light. And that's because they usually keep him under a glass case that blocks it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized when you shine a UV light on Robert the Haunted Doll, this symbol appears on his sleeve, which is usually invisible to the naked eye. And it's a very weird, almost snowflake-like design. And nobody can explain what it is, but it obviously looks like evidence that somebody did something magical with this doll and put this symbol on there.
Okay.
So I've been really interested in you know, sigils and all this kind of stuff for years. And I've also been interested in a field called cymatics. Now, basically, cymatics is about how you can take forms let me put it this way. You can take non-physical energy fields and vibrations and then you can transform them into physical designs and patterns. So, for example, if you have something like an audio speaker, you can put a flat metal plate over top of it, and you can sprinkle some sand on it. And then when you play certain tones, you'll see the sand snap into various patterns.
Right.
And if you've got all this stuff calibrated properly, you can get some incredibly, you know, beautiful, intricate designs. And so you can do the same thing with other substances. You can put a bowl of water on a speaker, and you can get all kinds of interesting designs. You can put some cornstarch in there and create a semi-liquid, semi-solid substance. And you can see these forms rise up and all these three-dimensional masses. It's just incredible. So I started doing experiments where I would take different frequencies and view them cymatically through water, but under infrared and ultraviolet light. And I realized that the patterns looked a certain way to the naked eye. But when you would see these patterns pop up under infrared and ultraviolet light, you could see other characteristics. And so then I started creating tones that included messages. And when I did that, these different messages appeared as these incredible patterns, which I then videotaped, froze, and turned into magical sigils. And then I've been taking these magical sigils and doing experiments with them to see if they work. And oh boy, do they work. This is a field that I am calling paracymatics. So it's taking cymatics and using it to create paranormal phenomena. And there's a lot more to talk about, and I should have a lot of results to discuss, but I will go ahead and give all the listeners of this program a heads up. If you go right now to joshuapwarren.com and you scroll down the homepage, you will already see some of these sigils that I've been posting. And if you take one of those sigils, you print it out, and you put it in a place where you'll see it every day, I don't want to suggest anything or implant anything in your head hypnotically here, but you paste that sigil out, which represents the word that's next to it, and you just look at that thing every day and then send me an email and tell me about your experiences. So, Vance, this is the first time I've really talked about this. So does all that make sense?
It absolutely does, Joshua. As a matter of fact, there's some overlap that you and I need to discuss personally, because I did some research into sigils, of course, in Norse mythology, the rune system. There are bend runes that are potent magical symbols. I also did some study on mandalas a few years ago and generated some of these random sort of pattern sigils that you're talking about. I've got a few of those in my own personal collection. So this is fascinating how there's this overlap here that you and I have never spoken about before. But I'm excited about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am too. And especially now that I know that you have been also doing this kind of research. And as a guy who has such an ear for the nuances of audio, I think that you could probably definitely appreciate all the dynamics involved in seeing the sound transformed into these patterns. So very cool stuff. And obviously, we could go on and on, but I want to remind everybody, the best thing to do, go to speakingofstrange.com, click the podcast link there. You can go back and listen to years worth of Speaking of Strange.
That's right.
As well as these new little podcast that I'm putting out, the Speaking of Strange Report. And, you know, I sat down one time and I figured it up, and it was something like, if you listen to every Speaking of Strange we've ever done 24 hours a day, it would take you years or something like that to listen to all of it. Wild stuff. But hey, thanks, Vance. You're doing a great job, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
No problem. Hey, and the big full story coming out on Coast to Coast AM overnight on March 31st.
That's it.
People are going to mark their calendars for that one. That's going to be some good stuff. Joshua, thanks, man, for making time for us, and we're holding the fort down.
You're doing a great job. Thanks, buddy. Have a good one.
We'll talk again real soon. Folks, Joshua P. Warren reporting from Puerto Rico on his ongoing research, experimentation, and invention. We'll be right back.
People don't change, that's all I know. You can go far, or you can go slow. Say that it's right, say it's for you. That doesn't change, what do I feel? Cause you can take away the honeymoon and stare into the sun. Or you can try.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock. Yeah, it's been a little train ride so far. How you hanging over there, Sam?
Oh, we're just hanging out over here. I'm looking for my aura.
I'm interested in generating some of those sigils Josh is talking about. That's kind of obscure and right up my alley. So
you like the obscure.
I like the obscure, and that's pretty darn obscure. Throw it up against the wall, see what sticks, you know, sort of obscure. And speaking of obscure, and sometimes when I'm doing this sort of research, it's like almost random until you find the threads that tie it all together. And you folks locally, it's not telling you anything when I say that Asheville is a weird place, always has been a weird place. There's almost like an ancient energy here, like a magnetic pull for all things outside, all things other or unusual. And speaking of strange, of course, is one example. But let's go back to 1935. In the sleepy little town of Asheville, North Carolina, here in the mountains of western North Carolina. And there was a print shop downtown. I'll change some names in this narrative, in this setup, as I provide some context, because what I'm getting at are the three rare books that I have here, and I would like to introduce you to tonight. They're a series of channeled messages from ascended master by the name of Ambrose. And the channel was a lady by the name of Enola, or her pen name was Enola. So these are known as the Ambrose and Enola messages. That's Enola, A-N-O-L-A. Ambrose and Enola messages, or the Man series, because the first volume is God's Way for Man, the second volume, Man's Regeneration, What It Is and How to Meet It, and finally, in 1937, Man's Journey Through Life. And these messages were reprinted and shared around in metaphysical circles, as I mentioned in the first hour by way of introduction, would be considered at the time Christian metaphysics or Christian mysticism, because they do have that overriding Christian theme, as Jesus and you know, the Judeo-Christian God is still on his throne in these manuscripts, but the information imparted is not necessarily Canaan. some pretty outlandish ideas coming down in Asheville in 1935, beginning in 1935. Enola was actually a local lady by the name of Anna McDonald, and she was a retired state librarian from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and she made friends with the folks who operated the Parkway Print Shop on Patton Avenue. And the Parkway Print Shop was run by a couple, a young married couple by the name of Ray and Gladys. Gladys had an interest in metaphysics, the paranormal, and so Anna and Gladys became acquainted through those circles, and it was soon that these channeled messages began to appear with the imprint of Parkway Printers. And the first one here, God's Way for Man. Keep in mind, this is 1935. This is a good 12 years before what we consider the first major flying saucer flap that paved the way for the modern UFO era. And here's a chapter in a channeled message in the back of God's Way for Man, entitled simply Space. And it's pretty deep. I'm just going to read this to you and let you decide if in 1935 here in Asheville some of these channeled messages were sort of premonitions of ideas that the UFO community would circulate, especially the contactees and sort of the spiritualist UFO folks in the 1950s. Anyway, space. And this is a channeled message from an ascended master by the name of Ambrose. 1935. We will talk of space this morning, for a conception of space is essential to man's progress, else he cannot realize one of the important causes for his existence. Man was not made to occupy the earth. The earth was made to serve as a school or training ground for man. As soon as he has finished his training, he will no longer come to earth, but will go on to other training grounds until he has grown to his full stature and is ready for his full work under the Father's direction. It has taken eons and eons of time to develop man to his present stage of development, uneven as that stage is so far as individuals are concerned. This is natural, as individuals do develop unevenly. No two grow up in exactly the same way or learn the same lesson from the same experience. It is just as it is in life. No two children develop exactly alike. Well, this goes on through the whole development of man, just as it does through his life on earth, which he remembers. The memory of his other lives is left out of his consciousness while he is in his physical body, as it would hamper and warp him too greatly. So consciously, he knows only the period in which he is living, but this memory is stored back in his mind in what he recognizes as his subconscious mind, or his intuition, or his good judgment. All of these things are the result of former experiences. How else could he have got them? They are the result of former lessons or experiences which have been absorbed into his spirit and so have become a part of him. He uses them as he does his arms or legs or other parts of his body or his knowledge, but he is not conscious of the source of this knowledge or why he uses them. He just does it, and his fellow man gives him credit for it and considers him superior. Well, he is superior in that he has for some reason been able to gain and hold as a part of his equipment the lessons he has learned in his former experiences on earth. That is all it is. No one is wiser than the other may become. It is the stage of development, the class, so to speak, the individual is in. However, this unevenness in development places men on different levels. Some have gone ahead much faster than others. Some started much later and have not got had so many experiences on earth. The result is that some men are ready to go on to higher levels of work while others are not. and this holds the advanced ones back and makes life too complicated for the backward ones. So men are to be divided into three groups. The first, a very small group of very advanced souls who will go on very rapidly under the direction of the leader who will come very soon. The second will be a very large group who will develop more slowly than the first one, but still are more advanced than the third group, who are the retarded and the young souls. The third group is very large also. They will be placed where they may develop, but where they will not retard the development of other groups. And the first group will be those who are ready to go on into the direct service of our Father and who will be given the final training needed for it. This training will last 1,000 years. It has been foretold as the millennium. In it, man's body will change to suit his new work. His perception will be awakened and educated. He will be taught the truths of the universe as he has not yet known them. He will be shown how to govern himself according to the Father's way, not in man's way. He will be prepared to go out and establish God's kingdom in other spheres and over other men. It will be the finishing school for all those who prove they are ready for it, all who can pass their examination and qualify. The second group will have a similar experience, but much less strenuous, for they will not be ready for the finishing test. They will have to have many other periods of training on earth where they will be leaders while taking the training. And under them will be the third group, who will continue their work. There is no knowing how long it may take the second group to develop to the place of the first now, but they will in time, and in turn will be taken into the Father's direct service. Now, what of that service? This is where space comes in. Space is all of the unoccupied parts of the universe. This is man's idea of it. It is distance, depth, width, breadth, space between stars and planets. When man does not know what is there, he calls it space, or at times nothingness. It has been all one to him until now. Now he must begin to visualize it, for in time he will go out into it to carry on his work. He will find it filled with bodies of stars, planets, worlds, large and small, nebulae, gases, ether, movement of what we will call, for a better term, air currents and bodies of gas and matter. He will be given a part of it in which to bring order as the Father has done. Only man will follow the laws made by the Father for governing universes. The Father created man. Man will use what was created, following the rules already evolved. Man will be as the right hands to the Father to carry out the Father's plan for the Father's universe. And this is man's destiny, the thing for which he has been training all of this time. It has been his hope and his aspiration, his fear and his reluctance. But man will grow into it, all during his last long testing time on earth. Then he will be free, joyous, radiant in his service, because he will be partaking of the Spirit of the Father. Heady stuff, suggesting reincarnation on other planets and other galaxies, published right here in Asheville on a humble little press on Patton Avenue in 1935. I'll bore you with some more of this stuff when we get back. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
No. enough to make a grown man cry. There's a little man in my head, and I wish he'd find another home. There's a little man in my head, and now I'll never be alone.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, wrapping up the second hour. And I've been telling you a little bit about these Ambrose and Enola books. They're so unknown, as a matter of fact, that on some of the collectible book sites, and you know, with the internet and all the book dealers everywhere, there are several places where you can search for out of print books. They're not certain ones, at least, are certain editions or reprints are not particularly uncommon. If you just search for author Ambrose and Enola, A-N-O-L-A, because some of you Asheville folks particularly might want to have these just because of the local connection. They're very peculiar little books to leave laying around and just pick one up and read a little bit of. I mentioned earlier the green connection and sort of the Gaia or the Mother Earth worship theme that was coming through in 1935, a little ahead of the curve again. I'm going to read you a chapter, and this will also kind of balance it out, because the Christian mysticism, of course, refers to the Father and Him with a capital H, but here you have the feminine aspect of it, and this is a fascinating and kind of a scary cataclysmic gloom and doom chapter, Nature's Confiscation of Her Own. We will talk on confiscation this time. You are wondering what that has to do with the new cycle. It has quite a part to play in the readjustment which will have to take place before an equitable, organized society may grow out of the disorganized, chaotic one now in force. Therefore, adjustment through the forced return to nature of all which has belonged to her must come first. And how else is nature to secure this return except through confiscation? What will happen is this. Wherever possible, nature will claim her own through the usual means, such as storms of various kinds, floods, earthquakes, and other upheavals of the earth's crust or changes in the earth's atmosphere. But where she may not even up the balance in this way, then there must be an unusual occurrence to offset the robbery of her balance by man. Man has consistently robbed nature for ages. He has considered everything in or on the earth as his and acted accordingly. He has taken more than he needed. He has wasted his substance. He has robbed and robbed both the earth's supply and those whom he has disposed of. And to those whom he has disposed of it. With this result, now he must pay it back and do it quickly, or else nature will restore her own balance and do it ruthlessly. It is the law, capital letters, and that is all there is to it. No one may prevent it, not even the Father, if he would, for the balance must be kept, or the earth will cease to function. Besides, this balance must be restored before the new cycle may come in. That's something like the Aquarian Age, the Golden Age. They refer to it as the new cycle, capital letters, in this literature. For it must have a well-balanced foundation in the earth, else it may not exist at all. It may not rectify the damage done. It cannot build upon an unbalanced earth, so the balancing must be accomplished first. This will be done by the earth, or nature is a better term, automatically, for when the unbalancing reaches a certain stage, the laws of balance rectify it. Just as when the waters of a dam become too heavy and the dam breaks and the waters seek their level, as science has expressed it. In this way, nature confiscates her own or takes it back for her own use. It is all one. She takes it in whatever form man has transformed it and converts it back to her own form once more. She may not be robbed with impunity. She will have her revenge, and woe be it to those who have done the robbing. In many cases, man has not meant to be the robber. He is used wastefully because he has not known that he was robbing, that he had no right to any more than his need required. So he has taken much more than his share. He has wasted in his use. He has used what he has taken to exploit his fellow man, to deprive him often of his share from the Father's storehouse. As in all things, whether in nature or with man, the laborer is worthy of his hire, And so it is in this case, but the higher should be that and no more. Wherever more has been taken, it must be returned. And if taken unjustly, then there will be recompense to be made to men from whom it was taken. The recompense to man comes under a different law and must be settled in another way, but nature does not wait for the settlement which man can never make. She confiscates her own ruthlessly, regardless of consequences, which consequences man has brought on himself, either through ignorance or willfully to please himself. Kind of deep, kind of scary. So if you like some local gloom and doom, you might want to pick up the Man's Books by Ambrose and Enola, all published here in Asheville. Like I say, at a little print shop on Patton Avenue, 1935.
Just out of curiosity, where would one pick those up? They seem to be rather rare.
You would usually start hunting at a place like bookfinder.com.
Okay.
That's my tip to would-be book hunters and collectors out there, bookfinder.com. Ambrose and Enola in the author, and you'll pull up a whole list of them. Some of them it can be had for $10. Others, not so easy to find. We'll be back with the Dark 30. From the summit of man's knowledge to the pit of his dark depravity. Speaking of strange